Hey everybody, this is Charlie from Anthrax, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle. And, you know, we have, well, first of all, look at these handsome bastards behind me. You recognize those guys? You know, it's usually, you know, sometimes it's rough going through like PR and, you know, record label execs and stuff to get guests on this show. But I think it's tougher to get some of your friends on sometimes. But
no, I want to apologize, dude. I know how long we've been trying to connect, and I keep postponing it, and I apologize. I'm here now.
It's good, man. Now, it's all
but
good.
God We're wanted here. Me to wait for right now.
Yeah, exactly.
What's happening, man? You know, the world.
Yeah, exactly. But this is the Frank Kavanaugh introduction to the Boondoggle audience episode. So want to get some of your background story. But, you know, I've had you know, musicians on here, and I've had veterans on here, but I haven't had one that's both yet. So this is pretty kick ass. So, Frank, first, let's go to the background. When I have somebody on for the first time, I like to get a little bit of the background. So originally, what did you want to be when you grew up?
You know, one of the first things I remember as a kid, I went to Jesu in University Heights across from Carroll, John Carroll, and I lived way out in the country. So I had to drive the bus, you know, like an hour, and I was at Cedar and Brainerd when I was 7 years old. I was actually at a side street. We were about to take a left onto Cedar. And the bus like rocked. And then we heard this huge bang. And then I looked to my left and there was trees. And above the trees, this huge black and orange fireball exploded. We were like, whoa, that's so cool. And the bus driver didn't know it was up. The bus route, he would take a left onto Cedar and then a left onto Brainerd and drop a kid off. So we take a left, and here we come on the medical center on the corner of Cedar and Brainerd. This is late 70s, early 80s, and the whole parking lot is covered with liquid and glass, and there's two cars on fire, and I remember seeing an arm laying there. I never saw a body or anything, but I saw an arm. And then we took a left and stopped the bus to let this kid off. And the mom's freaking out. What happened? What happened? And what had happened was the New York mob had come in and blown up Danny Green right there, killed Danny Green. So that was like, that's like one of my first memories is
dude, I never heard – you never told me this story before. That's incredible.
I don't tell a lot of people that story, man.
Wow. And the bus driver's just like, I don't see shit.
No, he was freaking out too. I remember the guy, Chad. He was really cool, man. God bless his soul. It was crazy because for 8 years I had the same bus driver. It was weird. But he was freaking out. But, you know, he didn't know what to do because – it literally happened when we were at the stop sign and he's turning a left. So it happened, then we're right there. And the guys who did it then jumped on the 271 there. And coincidentally, a stenographer for the FBI was driving by on 271 and saw a car actually cut her off. And the guy was driving, and then there was a guy in the back seat. And he was collapsing the aerial on some weird looking thing. And she knew enough to get the license plate number. FBI tracked that down, went back to New York, and that was the fall of the mob right there. Was they, the mob thought they were so untouchable that a little secretary took them out.
Yeah, because she saw couldn't remember the numbers.
That's what's going to take out the medical tyranny that's happening right now. It is just little ordinary people that they think they're ordinary, but they're not ordinary. You know, I'm 51 years old. My grandfather was in World War II. My uncle was in Vietnam. My dad was in Vietnam. I went to Iraq, and I never thought I'd be fighting the spirit of evil that my grandfather fought in the Nazis and that my uncle and father fought in the communists. But I am, and it's right here in America. The spirit of evil is globalism, is the lockstep demand that everyone take a poisonous vaccine when you could just take ivermectin or be healthy. You know, live a healthy life. So,
So, what did you want to be?
That's not really a lot of background. I'm sorry, man. background, real quick, dude. Elevator talk. I was grew up in the far east suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio. Went through Catholic grade schools, high school. Switched to public schools my junior and senior year and didn't fit in at all. And I fit in down at Coventry. So I started hanging out down at Coventry, made a band called Outface. I was 15, the drummer was 16, the singer was 17, and our first show was at the VFW on Mayfield Road. We rented it out on a Friday night. Then we all jumped in the singer's car and we drove to Montreal and played at Ildica's. Then we drove back and got back by Sunday morning. We were all sleeping at each other's houses. I had no idea at all. I went to Montreal and back. Like, that's how things were back then. It was so different. And was an Outface for a while. That whole thing, it was really aligned with the straight edge hardcore. Outface, we did like reggae stuff. We were more like Bad Brains, but we were really good friends with all these straight edge hardcore kids. And it was like, they were doing a lot of things that I did not agree with. They were very violent. They would beat people up all the time at shows. Guys at a bar watching your band, drinking a beer, and you beat the dude up. I mean, yeah, that's cool, dude. Whatever, you know. If you don't want to drink, fine. But you don't do that to someone else. We'll get back to the straight edge people. Anyway, I quit music in 1992.
I wanted to ask, like, before Outface, like, what attracted you to music? And, like, when did you first start learning to play?
It's funny because I just hung out at Coventry, and I was friends with this guy, Charlie Garriga. And my cousin Rob was his best friend. And they introduced me to skateboarding, BMXing. And my mom had a guitar laying around the house, so I'd, like, played it a little bit. You know, I knew how to hold a pick and strum. And so they were like, Charlie and a bunch of his friends were like, let's make a band. But they needed a bass player and they had no bass player. But I was always hanging out. And so they're like, dude, the singer had a bass, a PV bass. He gave it to me. Like, here, dude, just. And I literally learned how to play bass while I was learning the songs in Outface. Like, I didn't play before that. And didn't know the names of the notes, didn't know the names of the strings. They'd be like, oh, okay, dude, tune this to E. And I'm like, what's E? You know, the song goes E, A, C, D. Like, I'm like, I don't know any of that, dude. So I like kind of, it was just like seeing Danny Green get taken out. That's how I got into music, is just by chance, just by being at the right place at the right time. And I never really took it serious, you know, but it took me serious. It like consumed my life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I wasn't like, I want to be a rock star. I was like, I like hanging out with my friends and playing music. And 150 years ago, people would go to church. 50 years ago, people would go to church. And my parents met at church. Nowadays, people don't go to church like they did. Now people go to music concerts. Yeah. That's their church. And that's what I really saw, that music was more powerful than religion in a lot of ways. And if you look what just happened at in Houston, it is.
Yeah.
You know where there's human sacrifice going on. There's a open Luciferianism happening. This isn't some comic book, oh yeah, hail Satan crap. You know, this is real deal Satanism where people are dying. It's not a joke, and people treat it as a joke. They treat worshiping Jesus Christ as a joke. Oh, those Jesus freaks, you know?
Yeah.
Do they go, oh, those Satan freaks? No, they don't do that. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, cool, dude. They let it happen. So, you know, we're getting off on another thing. Real quick, let me just finish that. I did Outface, and I love those dudes. They're my best friends forever. But I was like, we all went our separate ways. Derek and Charlie moved to New York. I was like, I'm not going to play music anymore because I didn't like the scene, man. They're too violent. They were very fascistic. And very Nazi-like in the way that they would use violence politically. And
so you knew back then.
Oh yeah,
back then. A lot of our friends were. Yeah, I had no clue until the last guy got in office and it seemed to pull the wool off my eyes. But I don't want to get us on another tangent. Go ahead and finish.
So I was like, I was dating a woman who was 11 years older than me at the time, and she helped manage an art gallery in Little Italy. So I opened up Cleveland Independent Art in 1992. And from 1992 to 1995, I had an art gallery where we had our first show was Scott Miller, who is hanging in the Akron Museum of Art. And Scott Miller was a homosexual artist who had AIDS. And he was incredibly vocal in the AIDS movement. And he couldn't get shows anywhere in Cleveland. And so this is my new gallery. We're independent. Let's do it. And it's crazy because I went to the Akron Museum of Art like a couple of years ago, and I see his piece. I'm like, I know that piece. And I'm like, I showed that piece in my gallery, and it was hanging in a museum. And it was like,
nice.
All I did was I was nice to someone who no one else was being nice to. And none of the other artists that were in the galleries in Little Italy and all through Cleveland are in the Akron Museum of Art. No one even remembers them, the ones that were accepted and that were popular. They didn't change anything in the world. They didn't make a difference in the world. When you follow the crowd, you're not changing anything. You're actually just digging a rut, going in the wrong direction. All I did was help someone, and because I did that, you know, it's like, and that's what we all need to do. We all need to understand that the road less traveled is the road we all need to be traveling right now. And the ironic thing about it is that in the end, we will see that we're the ones who are going in the right direction, the ones who aren't going with the crowd, and that there's more of us than there is of them, even though they make us feel alone. And it's almost like we're talking in code right now.
Yeah.
Like no one knows what the hell I'm talking about.
I know. And I know we got some listeners that do. But so then what pulled you back into music then?
So all through my musical career in Outface, we were signed to Revelation Records, which was big straight edge label out of New York City. So we did tours. At the same time, Nine Inch Nails was coming up. And so we would like interact with them. And then Nine Inch Nails blew up. TVT Records signed them. And who was John Malm was the manager lived in Lakewood, and he did a phenomenal job. And Trent worked his ass off. And Nine Inch Nails became huge. And so I was jealous in Filter, or not in Filter, in Outface when I was in Outface. So years after I'm out of Outface, Outface wasn't like we broke up. We kind of just all went our different ways. Like I had all their crap at my studio apartment where we practiced for like a year. We just didn't get together. And so 3 years go on forward. I'm running this art gallery. I've got long hair like now. Totally not playing music. Didn't even own a bass. I went to a friend of mine who was tour managing Nine Inch Nails. He was having a party at his house. So a bunch of people were there, and Rich Patrick happened to be there. And I was like, oh, and I knew who Rich was, totally. I was like, dude, are you Rich Patrick? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like Rich Patrick from Nine Inch Nails? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, the Nine Inch Nails? Like, the Nine Inch Nails? And he's like, yep, that's me. And I was like, I think you're a pussy and your band sucks. And needless to say, he was taken aback. And everyone at the party, it was a small party. There was less than 10 people there. They're like, whoa, 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 you know, no fighting. And it ended up me and Rich debating for like an hour and a half whose band was better, to where the guy who owned the apartment was putting beers in our hand while we were sitting there. And then we left, you know, we weren't, I'm going to kick your ass or anything. We just, the night was over. So I felt really bad about that. Like, it was my jealousy. That's why I went up to the dude and said that. Even though it felt really good to do it at the time, I felt bad about that. So I was like, I kind of went through a thing, and I was like, my girlfriend at the time, I'm like, cut my hair. I want to cut my hair. I want to shave my head. So she put in a ponytail. I remember she was crying. She braided it, cut it, shaved my head. Like, a week later, Soundgarden was playing at the Fantasy Nightclub with Primus opening up.
Wow.
And there was maybe 75 people there. And I see Rich leaning against the wall next to the bar. And I'm like, hey, honey, there he is. There he is. And she's like, oh, no, 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 don't start a fight with him. Please, please don't start a fight with him. I'm like, watch this. I went up to the bar and I bought two beers. And I walked up to Rich and I was like, hey, what's up, Rich, man? You remember me? And he was like, no, because my head was shaved now, and I was looking like a crazy dude. And he's like, what, Frank Kavanaugh? And I'm like, yeah, dude. And he's like, hey, man, like, and I'm like, here, dude. And I handed him a beer, and he's like, what? I'm like, here. And he took it, and I'm like, I just want to apologize for, you know, being an asshole to you, dude. That was not cool. And me and him became friends. And he started hanging out at the art gallery. And in Cleveland, there's all these band rivalries where people really don't do anything with their band, but they love to mess with other bands, basically. So, like, he would go out to bars to hang out, and people would mess with them so that, you know, on Friday night, you know, I almost got in a fight with the guitar player from Nine Inch Nails, so on Monday morning at work, they could brag to all their friends at work, you know? So it was like, he stopped going out and he started hanging out at my art gallery all the time. Because I was not into that shit either. The scene is, it's like, and you look at what's happening in Cleveland right now with the Northeast Ohio Venue Association and how they're complete fascists. I was right, even back then, with the whole left-hand path thing. So me and Rich became friends. He quits Nine Inch Nails. He gets a deal with Warner Brothers. He records a record in Avon Lake. We're hanging out for a year and a half while he records that. He asked me, he disappears and goes to Detroit to mix. Him and Brian Liesgang went to mix the record. And I was just like, well, I guess they forgot about me. And out of the blue, 6 months later, he calls me up. It was the middle of February. It's freezing in Cleveland. And I'm like, hello. And he's like, Are you going to be in my fucking video or not? Excuse me for swearing.
Nah, it's all right.
Are you going to be in my freaking video or not? And I'm like, what? Like, he didn't say hello. He didn't say, is this Frank? And I was like, yeah, dude. And he's like, all right, 2 days from now, fly to LA. And that's when we shot the He Man Night Shop video. And then he's like, I want you to play bass in the band. And I helped him move the studio from Cleveland to Chicago. New place. Me and him got an apartment together. I go to the first filter practice. I don't know the songs because I just never spent time set. And like I said, I don't know the names of strings. I don't know the notes I'm playing. I just, people have always showed me. And how I learn now is I can learn from tablature, but like I'll watch someone play something and I can play it just one time. Most guitar players can do that. If they're worth their salt, they'll just watch and be like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. And they can mimic it and mess with it until they get the same thing. So didn't know the music at all. And Rich had to show me the first bass line. And then it all just clicked. And then I was in filter for 8 years. That's a whole book in itself, being in filter. Then Rich was so addicted to cocaine and alcohol that he was going to die. And so we were playing a show in Orlando, and he couldn't even stand up to sing. He sang the show laying on his back.
Wow.
And after the show, me and Steve Gillis, the drummer, freaked out on him. Steve took every amount of alcohol anywhere he could find anywhere and just poured it down the drain. And Steve Gillis never was emotional. This guy was totally professional. I'm like, Rich, I quit, dude. Screw you. Got in the bus. We're going to the next city. I'm like, I'm tired. We'll figure it out later. I go to bed. 3 or 4 hours later, Gina wakes me up. Dude, Rich is in the front lounge crying. We go up there. He's like, I'm sorry, dude. Don't quit. And I'm like, dude, you're my friend first. I'm friends with you before I was in your band or you were my boss. And if I quit, I'm not in the band. So that really sucks. But if you die, I'm not in the band as well because you're dead. So at least I can say to me, this is a really sucky situation, but I didn't enable you to kill yourself, dude, just because I wanted to get a paycheck. Like what they did to my friend Scott Whelan, another Northeast Ohio guy, who I'd known, who I knew in high school. So Rich goes to treatment. He's gone for 2.5 months, longest treatment center I ever heard of. Someplace in Arizona. And he comes out and he's like, you and Gino enabled my addictive behaviors. I'm breaking the band up. I'm starting a band with the DeLeo brothers called Army of Anyone. So that was it for my music career. That was in 2003. And so
You helped him, and then he turned around and said, you enabled him, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We helped him, and he turned around, and he totally screwed us, of course.
Wow.
Left-hand path. It's the left-hand path. Remember, Satan doesn't need you to worship him. He just wants to make sure you don't worship Jesus or God or the light. He wants you to say there is no God. And that's what Rich was all about, that there is no God. And so if you have no God, you have no fear of God. And if you have no fear of God, you will do things that you should not do to your fellow man because nothing's going to happen to you in the end.
That's just the way it is. In your mind. Nice guys. Yeah.
Nice guys finish last, So the filter thing, like I said, that's a whole book. I saved my money and had a bunch of endorsements and stuff. So I basically didn't do anything for a good 3 years. And then the money started running out. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? I had a 3-year-old daughter, newly married 3-year-old daughter, no income at all. So I was like, my whole family has been in the military but me. I was 34 years old at this time, and the cutoff was 35. And I called my brother, who was a captain down at Fort Hood, and he's like, "Hi, you're just gonna live your life and never be in the Army, dude." And I freaking joined the Army 6 months before the cutoff. And I knew that the Army could either use you or you could use it. And yeah, my whole family being military, you know, my mom's an Army brat, my dad, I two people went to West Point. I was like, I either want to be an MP, fly helicopters, or go into the JAG Corps. So that, and mostly I was like, I want to go into JAG Corps so I can know legal stuff to help other musicians not get screwed over. Because I've seen so, myself included, so many of my friends get screwed over in music. It's so cutthroat. And so they came back and they said, "You got 99.9% on the ASVAB, and you got 99% on the ASVAB. You can't get higher than that. What do you want to do?" And I was like, "I want to fly Blackhawks." And they're like, "All right, let's." And they start signing me up. They're like, "Wait, hold on. How old are you?" And I'm like 34. And they're like, "Nope." And I'm like, "What? 25? It's 25 or 26 is the cutoff in the U.S. Army to learn how to fly Blackhawks, because they don't want a 50-year-old, you know, Blackhawk pilot." So
yeah.
So I was like, "All right, I'll be an MP. Screw it." You know, my whole life up until that point had been oh man, hold on 1 second. My nose just started bleeding, bro.
Just started talking about cocaine. Look what happened.
That's hilarious. That's funny. Anyway, so. Oh, I know what that was, dude. It's been so cold. I've been blowing my nose and like it got all rough. And that was just like a little tiny scab that broke off. So what was I talking about?
So you went, "We're going to do MP."
Oh, yeah. So I go to my brother and he's like, "Dude, don't be an MP." And I'm like, "Why not, man?" And he's like, "Because all they do in Iraq right now and Afghanistan is go up the MSR or the main supply routes and they patrol them. And basically they're the bait."
Yeah.
Any IED they hit, you know, anyone who wants to. That, and I'm like, "Oh man, well, I don't really want to do that." And I'm like, "What about being a medic?" And he's like, "When everyone's running away from the bullets, you'll be running towards them." And I'm like, "Well, that's cool." And they're like, "No, you're too old to be a medic." And I'm like, so I was like, "Let's do the JAG Corps." So I did the JAG Corps, did the Army for 8 years, went to Iraq. It was, you know, something that I think everyone should do. I was, when I was in filter, I was a very arrogant person, and I didn't think I was arrogant, and I'm a nice guy to everybody, but what I came to understand, the military, no one gives a shit, dude.
Yeah.
You know, in filter, there's sycophants everywhere. Oh, yes, yes, everyone thinks they can get something from me. Not everybody, but like my best friend for 20 years, all through filter and after that, like I later found out the dude was making thousands of dollars off of me, impersonating me. And I was like, whatever, that's a whole nother thing. So I did the military, you know, and then I was always a Democrat, man, my whole life. More a libertarian, and I was like, there's too much government. There's too much government. But I was, you know, for legalizing weed. I'm for, you know, same-sex marriages, like a libertarian. Yeah. And as long as you're not hurting me or someone else, do whatever you want, dude. Just don't push it on me. I don't care. Exactly. And so when I was in Iraq, I was like, George Bush is the worst thing ever on the planet. The Bush family is the worst. And they are.
Yeah.
The Bush family is horrible, along with the Clinton family. They're both the same bird, just two different wings of the same evil bird. I shouldn't even just call it a bird. It's a, well, it's a vulture.
Yeah. So
I was like, Barack Obama is going to save us. He's going to save us. Barack Obama was my Trump.
And we were deployed during that.
Huh?
We were deployed during that election because I remember he came, stopped, visited our base and everything. And I was kind of the same way. I was like, oh yeah, this is the guy. And the old timers are just like, he's a sleeper cell, you know, trying to warn me.
Oh yeah, people were talking. No, dude. And I'm in Iraq. The election happens. We do all the mail-in ballots, and this guy Ruiz Caldera from Temple, Texas, was a friend of mine, and he's like, dude, you're wrong about Obama, dude. You're wrong about him. You're wrong about him. You know, and I'm like, the other guy was just as bad, but he was like, hey, dude, check out Alex Jones. And I was like, oh, Alex Jones? I know Alex Jones. And my friend Flo White had shown me the InfoWars website in like 2003, 2004. And okay. It was a picture of Alex Jones, like, trying to look all hard with a suit on. And I'm like, look at that idiot, dude, wearing a suit. I hated people that wore suits. So I'm like, I'm not going to listen to him. He's just like everyone else. He looks just like everyone else. And I judged the book by its cover. And Caldera gave me one of his podcasts. It was basically just the podcast from the day before. And it was all about Obama and how he was going to make a movie called The Obama Deception. And I was just like, shit, what did I do, dude? And going from thinking that I'm like in music, I went to a pretty high place in music. You know, I played all the late night shows. I was on a major record label, MTV, MTV specials, like whatever. Then I was in the Army, where it was a totally different thing. It was 100 completely merit-based, and like that didn't even matter. Didn't even matter if it was you were a good soldier or not. It was just like, you know, it was the Army. It was unfeeling. And it showed me the world and how there was an elitism in the world, and that the majority of the people on the planet wanted to be there. They wanted to be the rock star. They wanted to be the movie star. You know, they wanted to be the supermodel. They wanted to be the football player. And so the evil in the world, the spirit of evil in the world, to manipulate them, uses their own egos to say, you can be like this too if you just do this, if you just do that. You know, if you get this car, and all it's doing is it's filling people's minds and their lives and their souls with superfluous and ancillary crap. It's like a spiritual Walmart is what Hollywood is, where, wow, look at all the colors. And it's really cool. It's a spiritual, intellectual and artistic Walmart is Hollywood, where it all has to be sanctioned by the Chinese, by the woke culture, by the left-hand path. There's no creativity left. There's no hilarity left. There's no impromptu-ness left. And they killed themselves, basically, by making themselves into a facsimile of themselves. They are the Walmart of all those things, where because they've done that, a whole nother alternative society has risen in America and the world, where you talk to someone who's a Democrat, they have no idea people are protesting COVID mandates right now. Like, because they only watch propaganda. And I was in an argument with someone in my family about this, and I was just like, they were like, are you going to tell me that 7 million people 700,000 people didn't die from COVID in the United States. I'm going to say, yeah, that's not true. 700,000 people did not die from COVID. 800,862 people died from COVID. 100,000 people died with COVID, including George Floyd, is coded as a COVID death. You know, there's gunshots, motorcycle wrecks, all coded as COVID. So, no, it's all in the semantics. And they want, because of that lie, they want us to take an experimental shot that's not approved, but then they say it is approved. No, we can make this a mandate because it is approved. It is approved. Comirnaty is approved in 2027 after it goes through all of these tests. And if it fails any of the tests, it won't be approved. So it'll never get approved. Yeah. So they're free from liability because it's all experimental. They're lying and saying it's approved.
Yeah. Playing word games with everybody. Yeah.
Who does that? Who lies by omission? Bad people. And bad people become evil people. You know, and it's like people are like, oh, and there's no way that every single doctor and every single nurse. And it's like, well, no, New York City, 8,000 just quit. It's not every doctor says to get this. What's happening right now is on the level of what happened that my grandfather fought in World War II. Yeah. And when the Holocaust happened, it happened very quickly. They talked rhetoric about the Jews and the Gypsies and the Catholics and the Freemasons in Germany. They talked the talk for years first. Just like they've all talked about Trump supporters. Then they had Kristallnacht, where they went and they actually, well, first, before that, they had the Reichstag fire, just like the January 6th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they can now label everyone who's in opposition to the Nazis is now an enemy of the state. Everyone who's in opposition to the LGBT globalist Chinese Luciferian coalition is now an enemy of the state. Exactly the same thing. Then after that, they had Kristallnacht, where they went and they destroyed all of the Jewish businesses, and they arrested the Jewish journalists. They just arrested James O'Keefe. They've arrested Owen Schroyer. They're going to do this just like they've always done it before. Humanity works in cycles, and there's nothing new under the sun. This has happened before, again and again and again and again. And the last time it happened, my grandfather and his contemporaries said, we're never going to let this happen again. So we're going to make a code called the Nuremberg Code where it cannot be violated. And they're fully violating it right now. And Rosa Parks was a minuscule, insignificant little woman physically, but she was tired and she didn't want to move to the back of the bus. And all Rosa Parks had to do was say, in her head, she said, I'm tired. And out of her mouth said, no. And that's all we have to do as a people is in our head said, I'm tired of this. I'm not moving to the back of your globalist bus. I'm not going to participate in neo-segregation. No. No. And that's why.
And I'm hoping we're getting there. I've been tired for a while, but, you know, just keep waiting and waiting for something to happen. But,
well, that's the thing, dude, is that you have to stop waiting. And you can't say that you just are waiting for something to happen because you're actively doing stuff, dude. You're making music. You're doing the boondoggle. You know, you're bringing things forward. But, like, in order for the only thing that's going to save America and the only thing that's going to save the world is the people of America and the people of the world have to do it. Our forefathers designed this government for us to participate. And we've been lazy as a people. We've been fooled. We've been fooled by saying that politics is boring and it doesn't matter. Sports is more important. Yeah. Heavy metal music is more important. Politics does not matter. Politics and religion are the two most important things in the world, and they always have been. And we've been tricked into thinking they're not.
And we're told that don't talk about those two things, you know? You want to ruin a good conversation. Those are two things you don't bring up in conversation, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You never bring that up at Thanksgiving dinner, and it always ends. That's how, you know, the arguments are always over that at Thanksgiving dinner. You know, I don't want to be all dystopian, though, dude. Let's talk about something else.
All right. Yeah, I wanted to take it back real quick to your time in the military. But, like, what are some – I was talking to a buddy of mine named Static, who's, you know, he's a big supporter of the military and the vets, but he's also a musician and stuff, and we become friends. But we were talking – there's some parallels to being a touring musician and being, you know, deployed in the military. Could you see that yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Like, what are some –
You know, you're in a new place that you've never been to before. Well, maybe you've been there, but you're living out of a bag and you're living amongst – when you go on tour, that tour is a little microcosm of the world. That's basically a little days of our lives in itself. And yeah. When you're in a freaking platoon, that's a freaking days of its life. It's the same thing where you're with the same people all the time. You're with them so much that them breathing bothers you. You're like, could you breathe quieter, dude? Like, you know, yeah. Things that like normal people, you wouldn't even think about, but because you spend more time with them than your family, you know, it's like,
yeah.
But those are the closest people to me, you know, or the people that I toured with and the people that I was in Iraq with. Those are the people that I can call up that I haven't talked to in 2.5-3 years. And we begin the conversation right where it left off, you know?
Yep.
Those, I mean, I really feel sorry. Our parents' generation, maybe the generation before, it was cool to go in the military. Most people did. Now, people miss out. And yeah, benefit. It would benefit everyone to at least go through basic training, man. You know?
Yeah. It seems like now people, like, you know, I always see these arguments too. I'm not, you know, working for the military industrial complex, or they come up with whatever excuses, like that they're like better than for not joining the military. But it's basically, it's a fear thing, and they wouldn't be able to cut it anyway, but they're usually the loudest mouths I see out there.
Yeah. I think it's funny, dude, because that everyone works for the military industrial complex. Yeah. Everyone. I mean, they own it all, you know,
pretty when much.
You guys see that movie Monopoly that just came out, and it talks about BlackRock and Vanguard, which are two huge mutual funds. They own right now, I think it's $50 trillion in assets. It's basically they own 50% of the planet right now. And Vanguard, they sell it as they'll invest in everything. Well, yeah, that we invest in the whole economy, and it's a good thing because we're investing that the economy is going to grow. But in reality, Vanguard wants to own everything. They want to have a controlling share in everything. And this is what this Monopoly movie lays out really good, that, like, if you look from BlackRock and Vanguard, first of all, BlackRock is owned by Vanguard. They don't know who owns Vanguard because the shareholders are kept secret. BlackRock owns stock in Pfizer and Moderna and Fox and CNN and Kaiser Permanente and Cleveland Clinic, you know, the same company. And so they own those, and they own all the doctors. So they own the propaganda mouthpieces that tell you you have to get this vaccine. You can't take Horstorm or ivermectin, which is a 100% complete lie. They tell you, they have doctors that say that it's good for you. They have businesses that they own that will now fire you, and politicians that they own, like Joe Biden, that now are making it mandatory. And they're trying to take over the world just like the Nazis did, really fast. And they messed up so bad. Their plan was to have Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush become president. It didn't matter who became president. And then the whole Antifa stuff that happened during Trump was going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
But they were going to use the Antifa to lock us all down. And Trump was not playing their game. So they're like, okay, we're going to release COVID in 2023, but we'll release it in 2019 and get rid of Trump. And they did, but they released the whole COVID scam too early. And they're living in a 1964 reality where they think they own the media. And because the woke left, in their addiction to domination, because they're so weak, that's what weak people do, is they need to dominate because they need to control everything. If you're strong, you let everyone be. In their addiction to do that, they've canceled everybody and lied so much because they want everyone to believe and say the same thing, that they've created over 50% of the country is on the other side. It doesn't listen to them anymore. And the 1964 model no longer holds sway. It has no power. During Trump, it still did. But they messed up with the stealing of the election, with the labeling of us patriots as terrorists after January 6th, and with the COVID of just overblown BS, where they lie about how many people are dead from it. They're still playing by that book, and they fabulously failed. And just like when you were in the Navy and I was in the Army, dude, we invaded Iraq. The Minister of Information, Ali, Baghdad Bob, when we were in Haditha, the Republican Guard has defeated the Marines. We've slaughtered hundreds, thousands, okay? And we had rolled right through them. He was saying that the Iraqis were winning right up to the point where he was giving a press conference, and there was a bridge behind him, and here comes two Bradleys driving across the bridge with their chain guns, and they had to end the press conference. That's what the New World Order and the globalists are going to do. They're going to Baghdad Bob this out until the very end. And they're probably, Bill Gates is saying, going to release another bioweapon or a dirty bomb or blow up a city and blame it on patriots, because they're an animal backed into a corner. And like any animal that's backed into a corner, it's going to attack you. And it's going to, basically they're a beaver that's trapped in a trap, and they'll eat through their own leg to get out of it. And they'll destroy the world just to rule over the ashes.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to ask, like, what is one of your greatest hopes? Then, you know, a positive thing. What's one of your greatest hopes for the country you are willing to, you know, give your life for?
I have an 18-year-old and I have a 14-year-old. And the difference between their ideologies is night and day. And the reason is because my 18-year-old had LGBT fascism shoved down her throat from the age of 8. And my 14-year-old, 4 years behind, watched the absurdity and would say things like, why can't boys just be boys and girls just be girls? And get completely slammed for it. And I see that the generation that's in college right now are casualties of the culture war that we have to be gentle with. But the kids that are in high school right now are 100% against it. They're 100% Americana. They love Americana. They're sick and tired of the division of the left, the racist left that judges everyone on their skin. It's funny, Bill, because I have hundreds of conservative friends. The majority of them are minorities, but Pacific Islanders, Native Americans, African Americans, Asian Americans. I have hundreds of liberal friends. The majority of my liberal friends are white, and they say that white people are racist. So what that says to me is those white people are racist. In their head, they say white people are racist. Why? Because in that white head is racist. The Democrat white head is racist.
I've seen so much projection.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They project all their shit on everyone else. The things they hate about themselves secretly, they project on everyone else. And they say, I see it in you, but it's really their own battle they need to work out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's really sad, man. I don't know, man.
I wanted to ask you, being a veteran and stuff too, and I know we've had these talks before, but, you know, speaking of battles in our heads, what do you think, what's something you think we can do to break the stigma of PTSD, of mental health and PTSD?
When we're all born, we're a diamond. And if you've ever seen a diamond that's just been pulled out of the ground, it doesn't look like a diamond on a ring or on a necklace or a crown. It looks like a dirty rock. And in order to make that diamond shine, you have to take the rock and you have to strike it so that it breaks. You don't cut it. You break it. And so you have to perform a traumatic event on that diamond to give it a facet. And if you want it to sparkle, it has to be multifaceted. So you have to turn it and you have to traumatically strike it again and turn it and strike it again and turn it and strike it again. And trauma is a needed thing in every single person's lives. And When the troops came back from World War II, they had 5 weeks on troop ships with thousands of other dudes that were going through the same crap as them, where they could talk and have little mini AA support groups in 5 weeks. And those, a lot of them worked it out. A lot of them didn't. You never do, you know? You never do. But they learned how to deal with it, and that it was acceptable because a lot of people were doing it. The majority of the people have, quote unquote, PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. It's not a fucking disorder, man. Okay? That's a natural part of humanity, and being a human is going through traumatic events. And when you go through a traumatic event, you can either be the scraps of diamond on the ground, or you can remember that you're the diamond and your core is now shining and it's going to sparkle, because that's what makes you the badass. When you go to bed hungry, when you go through the fire of being canceled, when you have to struggle for your art, that's what steals the metal in the fire. It's needed. And along with the feminization of men, the left's anti-family whole stance and platform, it's all meant to make you not human, because to think that it's weak to have post-traumatic stress. No, that's normal, dude. That's not weak. It's not a disorder. That's part of humanity. But they don't want you to be human anymore. So they want you to think that that's wrong. It's not wrong that anyone has PTSD. It's transhumanist. They want you to think that you are a delicate snowflake that can't go through all these things. And we need to, just like what I said, everyone should go through the military, because boot camp, it kicks your ass and makes you a badass. And no one can deny that. And the left wants us to deny our humanity, that if you want to have strong muscles, you need to do push-ups. You know, if you want to be smart, you need to read books. and increase your knowledge. Where they're like, you don't need to read books. You can just go on the internet and get the knowledge. You don't need to be healthy. Your avatar will be healthy for you. Yeah. And it's all because they want you to upload your consciousness into a computer and slip this mortal coil. And it's modern day Satanism. It's pretty crazy, man. It's like how things are today are way crazier than any science fiction book that I have ever read or heard of, dude. You know, Andrew K. Yeah. Dick, all that stuff. So
I agree. So I wanted to ask you too. I see it up. You got it up there with your name, Full Metal MAGA. What inspired you to start that? And what is that for the audience, if they're for the Boondoggle audience that might not be hip?
After I came back from the military, I came back to Cleveland. I got a little farm in Geauga County, and I'm basically a hermit. I don't need to. I've gone into Cleveland maybe four or five times in the last four or five years. And I don't need to go into the scene. I don't need to be seen. I don't need to be cool. Because I've already done that. So all I do is I have a small little hobby farm, and I just grow what I want to grow. And I work in the legal field, and I'm raising my kids, and I'm like, this is cool. And about 3 years ago, right when Alex Jones and Gavin McGinnis and the Reverend Louis Farrakhan, Laura Loomer were all censored, my ex-band Filter played a show in El Paso, and the whole show was about killing Trump and how horrible Trump was. And the guy who owned the venue was a Korean vet. His son was running it. The dad saw what was going on and was like, get the hell out of my venue. Canceled the show. Next day, USA Today, US News and World Report, People, Time, the whole globalist cabal is filter censored by the right. They're getting their free speech violated, their Second Amendment or First Amendment, blah, blah, blah. And basically everything that they should have been saying about Alex Jones and Gavin McGinnis, they were saying about Filter. And I was like, oh, hell no, dude. What? My old band? Like, I actually know this is not true, dude. This is not true. And then the next day, Rich wrote this thing about, because he was doing major damage control on the Filter Facebook, because half of his fans were like, screw you, dude. Screw you. And so he was like doing major damage control, posting all these pictures of him in Iraq when he went there with USO.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with the MySpace thing.
I played there with them in the MySpace show, but then they've gone there a couple times because it's the highest paying gig for Filter right now is the USO shows, because no one wants to see them. No one cares about them. Filter's irrelevant now. They're completely irrelevant. The last song Filter did was about saying that conservatives didn't have enough money to buy their meds. It had like 60,000 downloads. The last song I did had 360. So it's like, I love it. Anyway, freaking, I'm like, he's posted all these pictures of him in Iraq, and I'm like scrolling, like, he's going to mention the fact that the former bass player from Filter is in the army currently, you know? I'm thinking like, that'd be a good way to defend yourself, bro. Not one mention of me. So I'm like, whoa, dude. And a grade school friend of mine, or a high school friend of mine from Cleveland, Greg Reese, had been working down at InfoWars. And right when this happened, a bunch of people sent me articles. And people send me stuff about Filter all the time. And I don't care. I don't want to know. But so many people had sent them. I'm like, what's this? And I read one. I was like, no way, dude. Piques my interest. Like, man, it's embarrassing to me to say that I was in Filter. Back then, I was like, because I've been screwed over, got canceled in the music industry, bunch of other artists that like, whatever. Like I said, that Filter's a whole nother book. So I call up Greg Reese, and I Rich had written a 3-paragraph little rebuttal, and I had rewritten it, like, you know, like on social media where you like rewrite a statement, like there, fixed it for you. Like I rewrote it and basically like eviscerated him and said that he was completely full of it. And so I texted my friend Greg and I'm like, hey dude, did you hear what happened with my ex-band? He's like, no. And I sent him the articles and then I'm like, hey, I wrote this. Can you guys publish this on InfoWars for me? And he's like, hey, did you just want to come on InfoWars? And I'm like, of course I do. Who wouldn't want to go on InfoWars?
Yeah. Right?
So he's like, okay, this is on a Friday night. And he's like, so you have like Skype and all that set up? And I'm like, totally, dude, I've got all that stuff. Like I'd never Skype before. I didn't know I'm a hermit. Barely have internet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't care about that stuff. So I had all these records back here in a closet gathering dust because I was embarrassed about being in Filter. And so I called Greg the next day. I'm like, dude, what do I do? Sunday, I'm supposed to go on the Alex Jones show. What do I do? And he's like, set up a thing. He's like, is there a camera on your computer? I'm like, yeah. He's like, make a background like set for yourself. And I'm like, what do I have to hang in the background? And then I'm like, oh, I should actually be proud of the shit I've done instead of being embarrassed of it. Because I was on that whole road. I was right there the whole time. I went on that whole trip and I saw it. And I, from what I saw, I'm going to tell people what I saw. So I get all that together. I go on the show. Owen Schroyer was hosting it. It was well received. He asked me to host. That was on a Sunday. He asked me to guest host the Veterans Call-In Show, which was a 3-hour show. That Friday, I did 2 hours of it answering phone calls. And he was like, hey, man, I'm thinking about having a regular routine of guests. Would you mind coming on my show every Friday on the second Friday of every month? And I was like, of course, you know, and my whole life I had wanted to go on InfoWars. My whole life I had wanted people to listen to me. That's what we all want. We want people to listen to me. But I hadn't sought it out because I felt so insecure about myself and that there's no way I could succeed because the woke culture ruled everything. And I was a pariah and I was canceled forever. And because I was honest about it, I believe God put that opportunity in my life. And that was almost 3 years ago, where I now have a show called Headbangers Hour with Michael Grace, who sang, Dig Up Her Bones. He's a former singer for the Misfits. He's the music that Michael Graves made with the Misfits. I think it's outsold the Glenn Danzig stuff like 3 times, which is amazing to me, but it's the truth. And yeah. I've made so many friends and I started making music again. I was so depressed. I was like, I'll never make music again, ever. And instead of making music to be popular or to make money, I'm making music for one reason, to spread the message about how evil globalism is. And yep. Because I've been honest about it to myself, God has helped me be very successful at it and has brought me to this place. And it's like, let it be an example to anyone listening to this, that the things that you've always wanted to do that are nagging you in your soul, you can still do. You just have to, like you eat an elephant, take one bite, put the fork down, do what you have to do, come back, take another bite. If you do that, you consistently do that, you will get what you need. And if you maintain a relationship with God, and that's a whole nother thing, dude, is that, hey, yeah, I'm in an interview.
I know. I'm surprised Flo hasn't called me yet because I texted him earlier at work about changing some of the lyrics on our latest song that we were doing.
Oh, dude, let's talk about that. I love that. And through InfoWars, like, I was like, Greg had done music with Flo White, our friend Neil, Flo White, years ago. And so me and Greg are friends again, because I'm constantly going on InfoWars, and I'm like, let's do a song together, dude. And he's like, all right. He's like, do a song with Neil. I'm like, all right. So we do this song, Bit by Bat, 2 years ago, predicted this whole thing that happened with us, you know, said it came from a lab and said they were going to crash the economy, everything. Neil hadn't been recording either. I was like, dude, get a recording set up, get Pro Tools or whatever. So he gets, what is it? I don't know the music program, but he gets a music program.
Yeah, he's
I don't have a music program at all. I'm not doing anything. He's like, dude, what are you doing? Get your shit together. So then I start making music again. And now Neil's done, I don't know how many parody songs you guys have done, like.
Yeah, like, dude, we got like a volume 2 almost of the Pandemic Party mixtape.
Yeah, dude, we need to put that record out. And dude, I'm seriously considering starting. That's what Full Metal Mag is, basically. I started it because I was going on InfoWars, and I wanted to only have Full Metal Mag until Trump was reelected president, and then I was just going to go away. And I was going to tell Owen Schroyer, I don't need to be on InfoWars anymore, because that's all that was important to me, was defeating globalism. And I thought that Donald Trump was our savior. Him not winning is the best thing that could have happened to America, because if Donald Trump had won, everyone would go back to sleep. And all it would be like anything that he said, like in the end, anything he was saying, it wasn't getting executed. He had lost his executive power because no one was doing what he said. And that's what would have happened this term. And it would just be business as usual. It would just continue as business as usual. But now, because they're so stupid, because the globalists are run by Alexander Soros, who's the son of George Soros. Now, George Soros lived a hard life. He has PTSD. So George Soros, his kid didn't live a hard life. His kid lived soft. So he doesn't have street smarts. He never went to bed hungry. He never had that PTS event that was traumatic that turned him into a diamond. He thinks he's a freaking diamond, but he's weak and he's soft. And they're playing. It's classic. The third generation, the fat, weak ones are what the empire falls on. And that's what their empire is going to fall on. Because this generation, I'm the same age as Alexander Soros. And I'm hungry, dude. And I'm thin. And I'm pissed. And he's not. And that's why we're going to win. Because they have been so freaking arrogant about this, that there's no way it's sustainable. And God bless them.
Yeah, I wanted to talk really quick then, because you mentioned it, you know, Dreadnought Juggernaut, your new project. And like me and Flo, like my idea with what we are doing with the parodies and stuff is I'm like, the masses, a lot of people, I mean, a lot more people are waking up, but the people that are still about, you know, instead of politics, football and, you know, music's more, they need the people that need to be entertained, that crave entertainment. I told Flo, I'm like, the only way we're going to wake some people up is educate them through entertainment. We're going to be funny and silly, but we're also going to throw facts out there.
Yeah, that's the only way. Yes, that's the best way. And if you look at why we're winning this, it's all entertainment. They want to control the culture. They want to control the music. They want to control the comedy. They want to control the movies. But what is the one thing that they can't control? Memes. What is the backbone of memes? Comedy.
Yeah.
The two number one top comics in the world are Joe Rogan and Dave Chappelle have been canceled by them.
Yeah.
So it's like they don't even understand what they've done, where their cancel culture and trying to control everything has just signed their own death warrant. And we have to be gentle to these people when they realize that they were wrong, because that is the moment when you wake up. No one, when they wakes wake up, is nice. They're all grumpy. And I'm grumpy when I wake up. These people are politically and spiritually waking up. You can't be like, ha ha ha, I told you so. We have to be like, it's okay, dude. It's okay. We have to be over the top when they're grumpy because they're waking up and they're insulting us. We have to take it and turn the other cheek. Because when someone's down, if you kick them when they're down, it doesn't matter if you're right or you're wrong. They're going to hate you forever. And that's what we have to remember. That's my hope for America, is that those of us that know are not vindictive when all this comes apart. And it's coming apart. It's coming apart. There will be a globalism. There will be a building back better. They did destroy the economy. They did change life irrevocably. But it's up to us to fill that void. And that's what they don't understand, is that Alexander Soros isn't getting his hands dirty planting garlic. He's hiring someone to do that for him.
Yeah.
Where I'm doing it myself. He's not going on a podcast. He's hiring someone to do that. I'm doing that myself. And I'm nothing. I'm minuscule. But there's 80 million me's. There's 80 million Frank Kavanaughs out there that we're just tired, dude. We're sick and tired of the lies. It's just completely, everything's a lie coming from them. And it's obvious.
Yeah. So what is the...
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Okay, so here, come on in and say hi. Do you need to leave?
It's me, Bill Bailey.
You already bothered me. Come on in. Come on in. Just come in. It's over there. She did now. Come here, Annika. Come here. Come here.
Hey, so I wanted to ask you, like, okay, what is your future goals now that you got this dreadnought juggernaut going on? The music's kind of coming back. What are you hoping to do now?
Well, I made a bunch of music through InfoWars, and I really wanted to stay. Whoa, sorry, that's the dog, bro. I really kind of wanted to stay anonymous in doing it, man. I was telling some people I was doing it, but it wasn't like Frank Kavanaugh from Filters, new music, you know, because I it's not about making money or being famous. It's about my kids not having to show a vaccine passport for the rest of their lives. So I've got canceled so many times that thank God for Owen Schroyer and Alex Jones and Greg Reese for helping me out. And now I'm making music again. I'm in the process of starting up basically like a conservative MTV, where I don't want to go too much into it, but
yeah, you don't have to. I know we talked a little bit, and I do got somebody for you. We'll talk offline for this. The website.
See, I love you guys.
But hey, well, we've been on over an hour, Frank, and I want to get ready and wrap up here. But I want to ask you a couple questions.
Yo,
I normally
ask. Freaking crazy Grand Central my place is, dude.
Yeah.
Just like, sorry, man.
All good, man. I wanted to ask you, kind of speaking towards music and stuff, is there a particular song that you feel has inspired you in life that you can keep going, that's like your go-to whenever you need that extra pick-me-up?
You're going to laugh, dude, but like South of Heaven, that record, I've bought the disc 6 times since 1988 because people keep stealing it. That's not the song I turn to though. Really when it depends, man, it's like lately it's been like Hatebreed, Destroy Everything, you know?
Oh yeah.
And I've been seriously blackpilled, and what happened at the Travis Scott concert, if that was a Hatebreed concert, for every person that fell down, there would be 5 people sweeping up and scooping them up and picking them up.
Oh, yeah.
And if Travis Scott thinks he's a badass, come to a freaking Hatebreed show. All right. Because you want to talk about wild ones. Hatebreed, those dudes will absolutely demolish you, but they don't want to. They understand what's going on. They're there for the music. And just like I said, that like it's a Walmart. Travis Scott is a Walmart version of Hatebreed, basically, or like the Cro-Mags, where you think you're a badass and you're from the street, but all you are is an ignorant fool being manipulated by Luciferians above you to commit human sacrifice, which happened.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, it pisses me off, dude, because that's not what it's about. And it's almost like cultural appropriation to have mosh pits and then say that you're like a badass, and then we really know how to, you know, throw a party, and then people die. You're not a badass, dude, at all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's I could talk for hours, man. It's
I know we got so much to hit talk about, and I know we'll definitely have you back. But
that has to have been like the most unusual interview I've ever given, dude. I had a nosebleed. I had a dog here. I had
guests coming by, phone calls. It's all right, dude. It's all good.
I should have just turned my phone off, but all right, man. Well, no,
let me ask you two more questions and we'll get ready to wrap it up then.
Okay. All right.
Three people who've inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today.
I saw Charge GBH at Peabody's Down Under in 1986, and the Cro-Mags opened up, and John Joseph and Harley Flanagan walked out, and I was standing right in front of the bar next to Tony Urso, and I thought those dudes were going to kill me. And there was like 40 people in between me and the stage. And those two dudes have inspired me so much. And it's funny because they've been at odds with each other. And I know them both. And it's weird. But
yeah.
I mean, there's so many, dude. There's so many good people. Billy Corgan was such a great person to me. Is a good friend now. Really though, I met so many of my heroes from being a success in music, and there's so much expectations, and there's a mystique when you don't know what's backstage because it's a mystery and you can make up whatever you want. But then once you get backstage and you see that it's not anything special, then your heroes are no longer your heroes. So I made a decision early on in my music career that I would not try to seek out and meet people that I looked up to because I wanted to still look up to them. Because you meet your hero and then they're no longer your hero. So most of my heroes come from history though. And if you look at history, history will tell you everything about today. So, those are my three.
Okay. And then favorite toy as a child?
Well, I lived in the country. So I used to, at the house I lived at, you came out the back porch and went down this big hill to a little valley and then went back up and there was our barn. At the bottom of the base of the hill in the valley was a big willow tree, and when it rained it would flood there, and so I turned that whole stream into the Atlantic Wall and like dug trenches and built bunkers and had like my favorite toy was making like basically like what dudes do now where they're making like where they have like models moving around on the freaking, you know, big table. Like I did that, but I was using my whole yard. So my favorite toy as a kid, going back to history, was history. I would use history and rewrite it for my own little entertainment. Because, there's nothing that's cooler than what's already happened. And you will get so inspired to do new things by history that you're like, I never even knew someone did that. And you don't know because Apple tells you what to think and Google tells you what you can look up.
Yeah, there's creativity's gone. Imagination is gone, you know?
And that's the thing about it. When you read a book, your brain has to conjure an image in your head. And if there's a conversation going on, you have to translate the words into your head into two different voices. When you listen to the book on an audio tape, you still have to conjure the images, but you don't have to focus on reading. So you kind of lose it. You still, when you watch the movie, you do nothing but have someone else's interpretation. The purpose of reading a book is entertainment, but it also acts as calisthenics. Yeah. It's mental calisthenics. When you're reading a book, you're doing push-ups because you're focusing with your eye. So you're paying attention to the words. So you're building that muscle up. And when you're reading and you're conjuring, you're building your imaginative muscle, basically. And people have lost that in the name of convenience. Basically, convenience is death. People are like, it's success to never have to do physical labor. That's what they believe. That's what we've been taught to believe. If you want to be a success, never lift a finger to do anything. Have someone else do it for you. But that is death. Because in the early years of your life, it might be good. But when you hit 45, 50, and you've not been active your whole life, like I purposely live in a place where I have to chop wood to heat my house because there's no better exercise than chopping wood. People pay to go to a gym. I have a garden that pays me, and it's the farmer carry. People actually go to gyms and do farmer's carries. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, dude, I did it. I'm like, wow, dude. So I don't even know how I got on that subject, dude. What are we talking about? I'm tired, Bill.
His favorite toy as a child, but
oh, that was my favorite toy is history, dude.
yeah. And then any message that you got for our brothers and sisters that are currently serving overseas?
Do not take the shot. Do not take the jab. If they separate you, you will be compensated. Just stand fast. All of this is going to fall apart by March and May. All of it. And they're going to try to say that it's all the unvaccinated are the reason that all the vaccinated are dying. But already that scam is not, it's not working. So I'm looking at, I have interest, contract interest with the federal government where I'm looking at loss of income if I don't take the shot. And of course, hell no, are you kidding me? What will you do if you don't have a job because they fire you? What will you do if they kick you out of the military because you won't take the shot? Well, you know what you'll do? You'll live. You'll be alive. They won't. Yep. And that's just how it is. Every single person that takes this shot will be injured. It's just a matter of time. And remember that. This is what is happening right now is the Book of Revelations. I mean, we didn't even talk about that, dude. You can't come to this concert. You can't come to this grocery store. You can't get on this plane. You can't do this unless you have the mark of the beast.
Nope.
That's all the COVID pass is mark of the beast. And the 14 Northeast Ohio venues that colluded with each other and formed a criminal fascistic cabal to ban anyone from coming to a concert if they didn't have the mark of the beast, they allow people to hail Satan every single show. But if you went up and said, "Hail Jesus," they'd kick you out. Why? Because they're bigots. And that's what we have to understand, that you look at the Foundry, okay, that has Drag Time Story Hour, and they say, "You are all bigots. This is about art." Okay. The same person owns that bar fired a Trump supporter during the middle, right at the beginning of the pandemic, because they were a Trump supporter. So the person who owns the Foundry is a bigot. Not me, because I don't approve of your art. And I will agree that it is art, the art of pedophilia. So in their naivety of, I have to be tolerant and allow someone's art, they don't realize that Satan's slipping in the art of pedophilia.
Yeah, you know, sad.
I don't want to talk about that crap, though, dude.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, Frank, there's so much more we could talk about and that we do talk about offline, but I'll definitely want to have you back sometime. But we got to get ready to wrap up. We've been on over an hour, and I got to go do some physical stuff to keep my old ass active.
I love you, brother. Thank you for having me on. And I apologize again, dude, for the runaround. And please have me back.
Yeah, for sure, man. And real quick, before I let you go, can you do me one last favor? Just cut a promo ID for the show. Just introduce yourself, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Cavanaugh, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Awesome, man. Frank, thanks a lot, brother. I'll definitely got to come out. It's that time of year, too, where we can sit around the fire at your place. So have to plan something soon, man.
Yeah, we better come out before the snow flies. Let's go shoot guns, bro.
Sounds good, man.
All right, man.
Brother. Love you.
All right, love you, dude.
There's pestilence throughout the land. The time of the Lord is at hand, because you're filled with pride and full of inequities. For cracking human genomes, there is no remedy. And then they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth, taking firstborns while they're asleep. With the needle and swab, you've been messing around. It's time for God to throw the hammer down.
Wake up!
God told me.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/Today's Boondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.